Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your engine!
Greetings and welcome to a Friday edition of the Shotgun Start. It is March 29th. Kyle, how we doing?
I'm good, Brendan. Last time I tried to do the Brendan, it was a disaster. So I'm just, it's like Mav McNeely just went straight handshake with his caddy. I'm just going straight handshake. I'm not trying to get out over my skis. I'm just, how are you doing, Brendan?
Thanks. I'm well.
Yeah.
Regards.
Exactly.
What's the most, so Scotty Scheffler kind of down on his luck, gets a pairing with who we're calling Marquee Group Malnati now. Apparently that's what they called him on the PGA Tour live broadcast. Pepe Peter is now Marquee Malnati.
They really called him that?
That's what a Twitterer just threw that at us. I don't know. I wasn't watching, but I love that. Marquee Malnati, they're selling tickets for him, and Scheffler's just riding along. But what is the most... How far are you willing to go with this Scotty Scheffler thing? 65. He's now at one point apparently had negative odds to win. You know, everything's a gambling. It was viewed through the lens of gambling nowadays. What are your odds? How, sure. You know, that you know, imparts what you are at golf and everything now. But apparently a negative odds at one point. I only need to look at the leaderboard to find his current odds on PGAtour.com because that's right there with his score. Plus 150. He shot a 65. He's 5 under. He got clipped by Taylor Moore, probably because he was in his B-Dratty Peruvian Pima Cotton or something, but he shot a 64. What is the most preposterous thing how far are you willing to go with the Scotty discourse? I should note, Kyle, you write for the newsletter Normal Sport, which I commend everyone to subscribe to. You write for CBS Sports. I think you probably have written about Scotty or will be writing about Scotty here around this Houston Open and certainly for the Masters. How far are you willing to go? There's a lot of people talking, you know, inching up to preposterous. Is this sacrilegious to say this, but we have another 65. We have negative odds to win. Where are we going with this, Scotty? How far can we push it?
Well, I think the thing that's become very difficult is how to contextualize it, you know, and and not just me, but I feel like a lot of people have been like yelling about this for the last 18 months now. Like you guys aren't understanding what Scotty's doing. And some of that is the gravity of like the wake of Tiger still, where people are like, is he doing what Tiger did? Okay. Yeah. Wake me up later on. And you're like, well, yeah, that's not the only barometer, you know? I think Scotty could win like 5 to 7 times this year.
Okay.
Is that too far? No. Is that crazy?
No. Kyle, in the past 10 days, and I don't pay attention to this stuff, I think Mike Greenberg on his little show, you know, Up and Adam or whatever it is, said UConn should be in the Eastern Conference playoffs for NBA.
Okay.
And I think there was Rob Parker, I believe, on Fox Sports Radio, was suggesting yesterday that Caitlin Clark should go to the NBA and not the WNBA. So you can just say any crazy BS. I would like to think anything that comes off as crazy, deluded, or misinformed on this podcast is come by honestly and earnestly and hard won. And so I think 5 to 7 times is not a disingenuous take. I just want to see how far we can push the discourse. Like, I don't want to suggest he's better than Prime Tiger, he should play in the NBA, or he can make the Eastern, whatever it is. I don't want to go that far, but I think 5 to 7 times is a reasonable, based on what we've seen.
Yeah, I wrote after the players, like, hey, I think it's time to have the conversation, is Scotty the best player since Tiger? And for some reason, people interpreted that as like, is Scotty as good as Tiger? And you're like, well, that's literally not what like the headline said, or the tweet, or the article. Nobody ever said that. in any form. But again, the contextualization. Do you ever, by the way, do you ever get concerned about your takes not being like giving takes that sort of go against each other?
Oh, so contradicting myself?
Yeah. Like
I mean,
like
sure, but not really. We have a podcast 3 times a week. We crisscross each other and tie ourselves in knots, I'm sure.
Well, I worry about, I used to think about this with Simmons, like when I listened to his podcast, and I'm like, how does he keep all his takes straight? And at some point, I realized, like, you can, like, if you can't keep them straight, then nobody,
the audience,
yeah, nobody else really is either. And so you can kind of just, to go back to your greenie thing, like, you can just say whatever.
We try not to.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we try to have smart discussion. I mean, there's a lot of stupid stuff, but we try to have smart. I don't know. I think Scotty, this isn't, it's just like we've said, 18, 20 months now. It's also like junior golf. It's, you know, was he Tiger Woods as a junior? No. Was he necessarily Nick Dunlap as a junior? Maybe not. But yeah, like, this is a sustained, it wasn't a guy that came out of nowhere. And so I don't know. It just, it's interesting to watch people sort of tiptoe around the outer edges of saying something extreme or worried about saying something too extreme about his play.
Yeah.
How good it is.
Yeah. I think my thing with him that I always go back to is he's so disciplined on and off the course. So we talk about the discipline on the course. You see this in the way he plays TPC Sawgrass, where it's just like, oh, he's playing that course differently than a lot of guys that are at his talent level. And he just has such incredible discipline and ability to stay in the moment that I think other guys, sometimes you see Spieth struggling with this. Sometimes you see Rory struggling with it at times where it's like, man, Scotty's so, and he talks openly about this. Like, I try so hard to be present with each shot. And that's just, I think people underrate how difficult that is when you're hitting thousands and thousands of golf shots a year. So I think it's the on-course discipline, but it's also off-course. Like, he's obviously, he's talked about this too, but he's very grounded. He's very, like, doesn't really get out over his skis with like his fame or his success or anything like that. And I think both of those things sort of coinciding to keep him grounded is I was texting y'all's guy Joseph Amania about this. There's not really an end in sight in terms of, like, he might drop off from a ball striking standpoint, but everything else is just pointing to, like, this is kind of just what he is, right? I mean, how long can this go?
There's a machine-like quality to it, and I don't mean that in an uninteresting way, right? I find him kind of interesting. I found him interesting on the Full Swing season 1.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't say it's like Tiger necessarily, because I don't know that Tiger, I think he probably was maybe got undisciplined in ways off the course that came back to bite him, came back to cause issues for him on the course at later, you know, middle of his career.
Yeah.
But he's machine-like in that way. And I don't know, in terms of, there's very little that seems that I see out there. That's some wave that could, like, knock him off of, like, kind of what how he operates both on and off the course. The putting really being a mystery. It was about as feels like the biggest one or the worst one. And that seems to have subsided, at least for now. He gained 2 strokes, almost 3 strokes, maybe 2.5 strokes today.
The putting's been good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. He's plus 150. Taylor Moore, who's a shot ahead of him, is plus 1,200 to kind of give you a sense of where we are. I do think, like, odds makers and people who follow this stuff closely, you know, and analyze the grass types and all this stuff for every player, are there, though. They're already there and, like, sort of talking about this guy in extreme lofty status, prime status.
The grass types. That always, I still am, like, not.
Matters.
I barely know, like, what grass I have in my front yard. Like, I only know just because I just relayed the sod because we have, you know, 20 kids over here every day just trampling, just Wyndham Clarking it.
Yeah. No.
And Yeah, the grass thing that gets me. The other thing about Scotty, and I think this is a little underrated, is I think he really, and this is something that you see in guys that are really great, like a Rory, I think has talked about this at times over his career. I think he really loves like the minutiae, not the minutiae, but just like the process of it. Like I think he loves. There's a really good GQ article about Scotty from a couple weeks ago that people should go read, but he just loves practicing and playing at home. And like, he loves solving the puzzle of getting better is kind of how he said it. And that's it's not rare, but I think it's more rare than people who are not in this industry or this world would maybe imagine. For a lot of these guys, it's just a job, right? Like they're just putting in the work, going home. And I think he truly, like, I think it's like in his blood, like he really, really loves it, or he seems to, like every indication. And I think that matters when you're at that level. I think it's helpful for that to be the case.
You mentioned the Masher, Wyndham. Why is he playing? If he has a back issue, why are you playing the Houston Open with the Masters 2 weeks out and you one of the favorites and maybe one of the best, you know, one of the two or three best players in the world this year? Why would you play?
Well, why is he 28-1 to win the Masters? That was my other question.
Well, if he's got a back problem, that starts to level out a little bit. But I don't know why he's playing the Houston Open. Separate issue.
Are you surprised by all the, like, I don't know if it's hate, but people are kind of anti-Wyndham.
Really? I haven't seen that too much. What do you mean? But like, he's boring or he's controversial, or he upset Jimmy Walker, I know, with this kind of support of the cutthroat comments that Rory made.
Those Jimmy Walker quotes were incredible. Speaking of contradictory things.
Oh yeah, we need an off season, and we need more playing opportunities. Back to back was just the best.
It was a Garrett Morrison thing. He had said something like, "Who's a player that would not be as good?" I don't know. There's some question like who would not be as good with worse equipment.
Oh yeah,
and people just are like, there's a real anti-Wyndham thing that I've noticed that is. It's kind of weird. Like, he's a young, good American that has played great golf, and people just sort of write him off and cling to other guys. I don't know.
He had a quote this week that was kind of laying it bare about, and talking about the equipment thing. I think people talk about it. He just wails away and kind of hits this cut that might sometimes get slicey a little bit. I don't know. And then the equipment corrects it enough. There's still probably a little bit of antipathy about, you know, the 18th fairway at LACC, and people make those jokes every time the ball starts to go a little bit right on the tracer. But he had this quote this week. It's not a good week to throw your back out, because this is just going to be a grip it and rip it, bomb it down as far as you can, because there isn't that challenging rough that you had to hit fairways in the previous years. I was talking about Memorial Park. So now it's just really who can hit it the farthest and then take advantage of that, and then obviously make the most putts. This course still has a bunch of defense around the greens. The greens are challenging around, you know, if you miss the green, up and downs are tough. But if you're hitting it good and far, it's a huge advantage. Basically, grip it and rip it, hit as far as you can. Accuracy doesn't matter, and make a few putts. Probably not what people want to hear, like the architecture aficionados, and this is a Tom Doak renovation, sort of a sacred figure for them. But that probably engendered a little bit more anti-Wyndham sentiment, even if it's just a kind of honest appraisal of what he's got to do.
I guess my thing with that is, sorry, I've got a bunch of kids running around here.
No, you're good. That makes sense. I know that whole deal.
I do have a parent question for you here in a minute, but we're just weaving in and out here.
That's fine.
The Wyndham thing, part of me is like, okay, people just talk in these hypotheticals like, well, what if the ball spun? What if this, what if that? And it's like, well, we're kind of just dealing in reality. Like he's sort of using what he has at his disposal to his advantage. And I think that for the most part, like you should be, and I get it, but like you should also kind of be commended for that. No, like other people aren't doing it.
I mean, he's doing it at an extremely high level consistently too. It's not like he did it for a week.
Right.
Right. I don't know. There's a clear talent there to be able to do it. Now, is equipment helping him in a way that maybe it aids him, you know, disproportionately more than someone else? I don't know. It feels hard to start applying that to various people. But he's doing it consistently. Go ahead.
When you're winning a US Open, when you're shooting 60 at Pebble, you're nearly winning a Players. Like, I get it when the argument is like, okay, if you look at this broad swath of people where guys are just popping up and winning, which is a lot of that's been happening this year, but I don't think he's that lower tier of guy that it's frustrating that guy can just pop up and win in a week because of equipment aid or whatever. Like, I think he's a good player who is maybe aided a little bit, but I think he'd be pretty good I think he'd figure it out in other eras. I think that the underrated part about Wyndham is, and this is the part where, just to go back to, I don't really know why he's playing, but mentally, I feel like he's gotten very like good and locked in. And I think that people sort of underrate that part of his game. And I don't know why he would jeopardize that for a Houston Open going into the Masters.
Yeah, I don't know that he should be playing. Needless to say, both he and Scotty are chasing Taylor Moore. And as I mentioned, Taylor, one of the Bidratti ambassador, out there in his Peruvian Pima cotton. Maybe it's a sport. I don't know where Houston's at these days as of March 28th, 29th, end of March. It's not that humid yet, right? It's probably pretty pleasant. I would. You're a Houston native, right? Originally from Houston?
Yeah, grew up there in Dallas. Now it's beautiful here. It's like 68 degrees.
It's gotta be awesome. So probably I'm going Peruvian Pima cotton. That's what I'm going to guess for Taylor Moore. You can get your own at bdratty.com and use the promo code SGS30. A random one I want to call out that I just keeps hitting it out of the park. Cause honestly, you know, people say we've been with Dratty forever and like, I'd rather that be the case than, you know, saying some people's clothes are the best. And then the next year having a new place and saying their clothes are the best. Like this is, I don't know. I don't know if they're the best, but we come to speak highly of them. We, you know, it's they've worked great for us both in form and function. But we spend our own money on these when we're at golf shops. I bought a polo over in Ireland at Port Stewart. I just loved the look of it. The Vin polo. I'm going to call out the Vin polo. VIN. I don't know who Vin is. Vin Baker. Usually they're named after friends of Billy or, you know, some sort of relationship with Billy or someone in the company. But Vin Polo, they have a ton of good styles in that one. And that's one of the cotton styles. I'm a big Vin Polo fan. Got a purplish one. And then this was a pinkish one. They've got other colors that are maybe less Easter eggy. But Vin Polo, I love that one. SGS30 will get you 30% off that purchase or anything else at bdratty.com. So, all right.
Baker, huh?
Yeah. Connecticut's own, right? Did he go to? No, he went to
Purdue,
Hartford. No, not Vin Baker. He went to like a Hartford. Well,
I'm thinking of
Big Dog.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Glenn Robinson.
He went to somewhere in New England. I want to say Hartford. Yeah, University of Hartford is where he went. So, Vin Baker, shout out. All right, let's get to it's Friday, which means it's Unsubstantiated Rumor Friday.
The best. I love this.
This is a good one. I think that merits some serious discussion afterwards. It's a good one.
Okay.
This is from Houston.
Like so, from the tournament, from someone.
Yeah, around the tournament. I don't know. Who knows? I don't want to in any way sort of, you know, reveal any sourcing. But it comes from Houston this week. So we saw Jay Monahan's in town, right? That amazing screen capture by Dylan to share with the... What is it? Orbit or something? The Astros mascot?
See, I grew up with, they didn't have that when I was an Astros fan growing up. We had the Killer Bees. We didn't have Orbit.
Sure. Well, you know, they got to sell stuffed animals for $75 in the team shop. So here comes Orbit. So he's there. Jay Monahan's in town. So rookies were invited to a very nice restaurant to have dinner with Jay in like a private room, a private setting, meet the commissioner. According to someone who may have been there, got word of it, has knowledge of said dinner. With about 37 rookies or so, I think in the field, I think almost they bumped the fields up, right? The 150, whatever it is, to get the rookies more playing time. apparently about 9 rookies showed up to this dinner with Jay Monahan out of some 35 to 40 that are in the field. I guess they had a big long table and they had to come in and take away a couple of the tables so it didn't look like awkward, bad, or empty, with like 2/3 of the room with empty chairs and no shows. I guess like it wasn't a mandatory meeting, but apparently like about 9 out of 37 or 38, however many are in the field, showed up.
That's tough.
Unsubstantiated rumor Friday. I personally, my reaction to this is like, ooh, that's bad. That's tough. And it's stupid. Like, if you're like, whatever you think of Jay Monahan, personally, professionally, he's the commissioner of your league. You're a rookie. You literally like might not, your tour career, you might not be on the tour in 4 months from now ever again. I hope you are. I hope you have a long career. But he's someone of some renown with probably a great deal of connections and importance. And I just think you should probably go to dinner. Maybe the communication was poor. We know they've communicated poorly with these rookies before, saying they're all going to play in Sony and like 4 of them get in. Maybe it was miscommunicated. I don't know.
Maybe it was, maybe they only had us, maybe they had to RSVP. Maybe they forgot to RSVP.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that, but it seems to me the fact that the chairs and tables were out and they had to come pull them before, you know, it started to get really awkward. I just think like you go, like, Jay Monahan, I think he misplayed the Saudi threat, obviously, from the start, early on. Like, now, though, I to suggest he did probably not a great job preemptively or proactively like addressing that threat 2 years ago and kind of putting your head down, this is going to work out. He's trying, I think, to figure it out now. You may disagree with how he's done it. That's totally fine. I think it's probably pretty stupid to assign some like really evil intent to him. I doubt he's trying to like fill his own coffers and just buy 4 more boats or put on additions to his house. And not like, I think he's probably trying to do right by his job, the charge of his job and the tour. I don't think he's probably evil intent. There's these like whack job, you know, Jimmy Walker and Chris DeMarco are probably in a outhouse in South Texas, like throwing conspiracies out about this. Some hunting stand. There's no like real conspiracy here. He's probably trying to do the best he can. I think you go to dinner with the guy for your own personal benefit and make that connection with someone who is, whether you want to admit it or not, quite powerful.
I wonder if, what if you went in and just canvassed Steamboat Springs and just kind of polled the people there, like what the results would look like, what they would. Now, listen, like I agree with you, but also is this not and I think this is a little bit where the discussion needs to go, is like, is this not emblematic of like where, like, regardless of what you think about Jay Monahan or leadership or whatever, like, have you not sort of lost the plot a little bit?
Yeah. I don't want to also be clear. I want to offer disclaimers about assigning intent. Like, guys skipped it because they hate Jay. Probably clearly guys didn't think it was big a deal enough. Like, they were like, we got to practice or I got something else to do and it's not important enough. And maybe because they didn't like it because it was objection, a conscientious objection to Jay and his job, or it may just, but there's whatever the intent was, like they allegedly skipped it. So yeah, you're right, but it is maybe a powerful statement.
Yeah. And it's one of many things. There's just so many different things that you hear, that are like adjacent to that sentiment that it's like, I don't know, like should, even if you think that, and I have nothing against Jay Monahan. I've not interacted with him really. Like, I think he actually is like from everything you hear, like pretty good dude, like wants to do the right thing. Like just is maybe was in the wrong position at the wrong time for him specifically. But like at some point you just have to say like, you've lost the moment. I don't know if momentum is even the right word, but you've lost the sort of like ear of the entire room, and you just need to change for change's sake. Right? Like, is it, but the opposite is happening, Brendan. Like it's going in the opposite direction.
Entrenched. He might be harder to get rid of than ever.
He's accumulating more power. And so that's the part where, and we had a group text about this the other day. Like I'm curious about the mechanism for like how you would go about replacing a commissioner or like, you know, a sort of change of power, because I think that, I don't know. I mean, it's so messy right now that I don't know if you would want to do that before everything gets worked out with the Saudis, after, during. Like I don't even really know what to think anymore, but I think this unsubstantiated rumor is emblematic of the sort of sentiment on tour.
Yeah, I it does seem like it's might be easier to add a pass an amendment to the Constitution of the United States than it might than it is to oust Jay Monahan right now, given that he has a board seat.
I feel like it is
Enterprises, maybe new board seat on the tour and the tour Enterprises. Yeah, it might be hard. I don't know. It's just unsubstantiated. It just was weird to me that if that is the case, you wouldn't go if you had the opportunity. And
yeah,
I think at this point though, is he maybe the best person for the job? Like to Malnati's point, I think it was Malnati. We've swung maybe a little too far. Like, I don't know. I don't want some Harrison Endicott or whatever rookie trying to figure out the deal with the Saudis. Like, I don't know. Could I don't want to put it, whoever rookie who's mad at Jay, like they're not going to do a better job. Right. So did the, like, is there some sort of equilibrium coming where the players have input, but maybe they should not be the ones doing mergers and acquisitions and equity structure? No?
I hope so. I mean, I've been screaming about this in like my newsletter, on Twitter, whatever. And I think Eamon Lynch has been big on this too, of like, yo, you guys are, I've said this on Shotgun Star with Andy before, like you guys are professional golfers and you're unbelievable at that. And just because that's true doesn't mean you're great at like deal making with foreign countries. And I think most of them are self-aware enough to know that. And some of them are not, right? Like there's an arrogance there with some of the players that are like, oh, because I'm good at this, I'm also good. I mean, we all do that, right? Like I think like, oh, because I'm good at this one thing, then that means I'll be good over here. And it's like, well, maybe that's not your skill set. Maybe you're not suited to do that very well. And so I think it's so messy when you talk about incentives as it relates to like players running a league. And Keith Mitchell said this out loud at the Players Championship. They had him on that what's the smiley thing on Friday, happy hour. And they asked him, they're like, what do you think about the rough around 17, like the apron or what, you know, whatever, the bumpers? And he said it out loud, and this was the quiet part out loud. He said, as a player, I love it. He was like, as a fan, probably wouldn't like it very much. And you're like, yeah, man, like that's the whole thing right there. And when players are, for the most part, in charge, I don't know that those incentives line up with what the desires and incentives of the fans are. And all of like lining up those incentives between players, fans, executives, proud partners, foreign countries, like that's a very, very difficult job, but it's what needs to happen for all of this to move forward.
Do you think the fans' incentives are for more Champions Tour events with larger purses at $25 million? Because you want to talk about arrogance and delusion. We have Chris DeMarco on the Subpar podcast saying, we're kind of hoping that the Live buys the Champions Tour. Let's play for a little real money out here. I mean, this is kind of a joke when we're getting $2 million. There were like seven guys last week at the Players that made more money than our purses. This got Mr. DeMarco rightfully excoriated on golf Twitter. It was a bit of a pile on. They're bad comments. They're stupid. The value of the Champions Tour, as we know, is negligible at this point. Maybe a loser when it comes to revenue on the books at the global home, largely created for all an era of players that maybe didn't get the great benefit of the pension that has now substantial, and players of Chris DeMarco's era are kind of, I don't want to say double dipping, but they got the pension and they're playing for $2 million and they're playing for $3 million at majors. And, you know, the LPGA, DP World Tour are around the same time, around the same purses this week and often most non-major weeks. So he came out with these comments and got pilloried. It's like, were they surprising to me? No, they weren't. Like, it's stupid. It's shocking, but not surprising. Like, we're in an era when everybody's looking around the room saying, I can't believe they got that much. I want mine. And their own self, like, reflection is often set aside. What value they're generating is immaterial. And, like, this is just an extreme, because the Champions Tour is like an elephant in the room on this. Like, we know, everybody knows, it's like, it's very negligible. I was not surprised that this came, like, this is where we are right now. Money is all the rage. That's all we talk about. And it didn't surprise me, as kind of deluded as they may be. It didn't surprise me that someone went there.
Did you hear him say it?
No, but I had a few people go back to it and they're like, oh, there's not context missing.
Okay.
Is that fair?
I don't know. I have not heard him say it either. I have not listened to the words come out of his mouth. It seemed like I heard Colton Oates say on Twitter, like, oh, everybody was laughing. And you're like, well, that might be true. Again, I haven't heard it, but I think, you know, even when you're joking about something like that, there's at least something in you that believes it.
You put it out there.
Yes. Yeah.
You walked it out there.
Yeah. You're kind of floating it out there. We've all done that. And, I just, again, like, I think when guys get on a tour and they hear like, oh, this is our league, we are the PGA Tour, there becomes this sort of ownership in a good way, but then entitlement in a bad way, right? And I think the entitlement can lead to, and to be fair, like, Chris DeMarco was born at the wrong time. Right? Because if he was born 15 years later, he'd be a lot richer than he was than he is based on when he played.
I don't know. He got a little bit of the Tiger wave. He wasn't born in the 80s, or he didn't play in the 80s, you know, but yes, you're right. He's, you know, someone of his skill set now is making $3-4 million a year or something, $3 million a year.
Totally.
He was a good player.
And so I get the frustration there, but there's just absolutely no, and this is where There's no self-aware, and maybe he, I'm sure, like, part of me, like, can't believe that you wouldn't understand this, but just understand basic business models of revenue and expenses, right? Like, you are like a massive expense for this big entity and you are very little revenue. Like, I don't understand how, like, that's just, it's not even like a complicated deal with the Saudis. It's just revenue and expenses. And I don't understand how someone doesn't get that. Like, he has to understand that, right?
I think he just, yes, probably, but he just sees, like, you know, one person at the Players making $2 million for whatever T3 or set runner up. And he's like, that's crazy that our whole purse for a bunch of guys who've done things, did things on the tour as well, is only $2 million.
But and yes. I think where that gets a little bit more fair is where, okay, you get this $1.5 billion from SSG, and guys like DeMarco see that and they're like, wait a second, like, that wasn't money that you know, like, Patrick Cantlay necessarily brought in because he's Patrick Cantlay. That's probably a bad person to use as an example, but that wasn't, you know, that wasn't the Stars bringing that in. That wasn't like a TV. That wasn't a media rights deal. That wasn't a partnership with a gambling company because they want to be like attached to all these stars on the PGA Tour. That was just money that I think sometimes those guys see that money as, oh, they just gave it to the PGA Tour. Well, first of all, they didn't. But also, I more so understand why you would be frustrated about that than like, hey, you weren't a part of the tour that brought in $700 million from ESPN, CBS, and NBC for the media rights. That was because of Rory and Spieth and JT. That wasn't you. And so I guess I could attribute to like this money kind of coming in from new places and different places and unknown places to those guys. But still, I mean, it seems preposterous.
I think I also, though, I don't love, and I wrote about this for the newsletter on Friday, it may be a little too nihilistic, but I think we were quick to contrast this with like Pepe Peter's comments about like, I don't play for money and all that, and which were charming and fine anyways. But like, I don't think there's some new dark force controlling golf. I think it's always been about money.
Yeah.
I think we're just talking about it a little bit more. It's pro sports. It's about money. The Masters is about money. They just don't talk about it as much because they have security. They don't need to talk about their own money or anyone else's. Like, but it's still like, it's professional sports. It's about money. We're just talking about where it's coming from a bit more, how much there is. A lot more guys looking around the room at other people saying, I want as much as he has, or I deserve as much as he got. And I think it's a little naive and overly sanctimonious to suggest this is some sort of new dark force controlling the game. It's the same fuel in the engine that has always been a driver of pro golf. It's just, we're talking about it a lot more and maybe, and sometimes in kind of unbecoming ways, like I would say DeMarco did.
Do you think the tour does a good job of maximizing the revenue that they bring in? I think it's
a good question. I don't know.
I think it's like $2 billion a year or two. I don't know. Somewhere 1.9, 2.1, somewhere around there.
I mean, I think they need a second drawbridge on the other side. I don't know. That's a big question. Do you? Seems like you think you have an answer to that, or you have thoughts on it.
I have been on the side of that they don't do a great job of maximizing revenue. But recently I started thinking about ways that they could maximize revenue. And it's like, oh, well, it's like partnerships with gambling companies that might not be a great thing long term, you know? And so I think, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, but I think it's a question that more players need to consider.
Yep. Yep. Speaking of questions we might not know the answer to, we are on call for SGS Golf Advice here. It's Friday. We got a couple great submissions. SGSGolfAdvice@gmail.com is the email. We got a bunch of good ones. We just talked about how, I think Shane and I talked about on Wednesday, the boozy lunch that Rory and Lowry had after the Ryder Cup that sort of led to the creation. And we're going to play Zurich. You know, one day you're having a couple cocktails, the next day you're playing together in New Orleans. But we got an email related to that. It's from Ross. Hey, lads, 36, one kid, no interest in a scrap. Firstly, can confirm Lowry's drink of choice certainly used to be a vodka Red Bull. Throwing it back. That cannot be the case currently, right now. In 2013, okay, that makes a little more sense. There's no way he's, at whatever age he is now, 2024, having vodka Red Bull. In 2013, I was at a rugby tournament in Kinsale, County Cork. This tournament was notorious for being one of the biggest piss-ups of the year. I assume that means party, drunk fest. Piss-ups of the year in the country for 20 to 25-year-olds. On morning two, around 10 a.m., I walked into the rugby clubhouse to get a coffee, and Lowry came up beside me and ordered a couple double vodka Red Bulls. 10 a.m. One for his mate. He was hungover like the rest of us and was just getting straight back on it. 12 hours later, I met him in the nightclub, and he was in better shape than pretty much everyone there, even though he'd been drinking all day. The lad can hold his booze and is also a top fella. Photo attached of the nightclub. It's a great photo. I mean, looks like someone you wouldn't want to mess with either. Just young Shane, the buzz cut, and probably, you know, yeah, he looks like a lad you wouldn't want to tussle with.
For sure.
On the golf advice side, so that was just a supporting evidence that...
Okay, that wasn't even...
No, that was just an intro. I thought that was clarifying info worth sharing.
Okay.
On the golf advice side, considering you were in Ireland very recently, 15 years ago, I was in the west of Ireland for an annual golf trip. We were staying at my friend's house, who was a member of the club that we played 2 days in a row. On day three, the water in the house stopped working. After a heavy night of drinking the day before, there were some very smelly men in the house who needed a washdown. We didn't have a tee time that day, but half of the group, not the member, decided to put on golf clothes, drive to the course, and pretend like we were playing so that we could shower there. Just for a shower, not to play. When we walked in the changing room, the only person in the locker room was the Taoiseach, which the Taoiseach, I took many classes on Ireland. That's the president, basically. The prime minister of the entire country in the locker room.
Of the entire country?
Yes, yes, yes.
Not so the president of the club, but the president
yes,
of the country.
Of Ireland. Yes, okay. The Republic of Ireland.
Okay.
Taoiseach.
So Joe Biden's in the locker room.
Apparently. He immediately asked us whether we were about to go out and play or were coming in. Setting out that morning, we had not planned on lying to our head of government, but thankfully, without missing a beat, one of my friends immediately responded saying we had just played and played poorly. We exchanged a few more words. They're just there for a shower. Reeking, hungover, didn't come to play, but said we just got in. We played poorly. We exchanged a few more words with them until he finally left. We cried laughing and at last showered. But my question is, do you think it was okay for us to go and use the facilities considering the situation? Also, how do you think you would have responded to the Taoiseach's questioning if you were in a similar hungover state?
Can you imagine that?
Added information, it was fully booked up timesheet that we couldn't have gotten onto even if we wanted to play. Lowry was not playing rugby himself. He was just there to party. Okay. What would you... I mean, I think it's fine to go shower. Look, as someone, we parked an RV at a very nice, beautiful golf club in the Whistling Straits area, Sheboygan area, and then would go and shower at the golf course as our shower and facilities. I think it's okay to go to the club and take a shower. If your water's out and that's the available shower, you go. You're fine. I think you were okay the way you responded to the Prime Minister Taoiseach's
How far did they drive?
I don't know.
See, this to me, it feels, and maybe this is an American thing, and maybe this is like part of the tipping culture that's been so popularized or been so popular to talk about recently. But to me, if you do that, you need to like purchase something. You need to like give them some business, right?
Just for taking a shower?
Yeah.
They played there the preceding 2 days, it seems like. They just weren't going to on this day three.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe that counts. I know that like when we stop at a Starbucks or a gas station or whatever with all the kids and they're hollering and trying to go to the bathroom, I always feel obligated to like purchase something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. Yeah. I try to. If you're just going to use something for free, you
and
try.
It's like $47 later. You're like,
right.
Yeah. Maybe we should just eat on the side of the road.
Sour Patch Kids and all this stuff. Yeah. I think it's totally fine. If your shower is out and you've been at that club the last 2 days, you can go and use it. And I think it's okay to lie to the Prime Minister about just, you know, we played golf and we're taking a shower. That's completely fine.
Can you imagine? You walk in. White lie. Yeah. You walk in and the president of your, I don't know what the, I don't understand the Irish government. I barely understand my own government. I don't understand my own government. But so maybe the president's not as like sort of powerful or revered in Ireland. Maybe it's a prime minister thing. I don't know.
But it's a head of, yeah, it's maybe regardless, not as powerful, but yes, it's a big executive position.
Yes.
Yeah.
Regardless. Can you imagine walking in and You're doing this thing where you're like, we maybe shouldn't do this. And that's the person that you see.
It's an amazing story.
That's incredible.
I think you're fine using the shower and telling a little white fib, just given the circumstances. I wouldn't recommend lying on any circumstance, but this is a little fib just to kind of keep you moving.
Yeah. And I think the fact that they played the previous 2 days does sort of,
yes,
that gets at what I was saying. I think you're good to go. And all-time story.
Good email from Ross on both the Shane Lowry, you know, of his younger days. Again, this was 12 years ago, his younger days. Good support for his ability to be a good lad and go deep. And then also a shower story with the president.
I don't think I've ever had a Red Bull vodka.
Yeah, just keep that up. Yeah, keep that streak alive.
Vodka is awful to me.
Okay.
Atrocious. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Do you drink dark liquor? Do you drink much liquor?
Not a ton. Tequila.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's so in vogue these days. And also you're in Texas. It's probably a little bit more prominent. So
is tequila like, is that,
I mean, over the last, I'd say 5 to 7 years, there's a lot more tequila drinking going on. Whereas when we were in college, it was like you take the tequila shots and do the lime and all the other nonsense. And that was just more of a, you know, utilitarian purpose. Now it's more of a fancy thing.
Well, that was this will surprise nobody, but I didn't drink until I was 21. And my first drink ever was a shot of tequila.
Okay. That's tough.
And it was at this birthday dinner or whatever. And I was like, why do people drink? This is insane.
Yeah. I mean, the question still holds merit. Yeah. I mean, it's not a weightless question. Just based on.
It was horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next email from Jacob. Caddying for my boss at a pro-am. I'm 33 years old, no kids and no interest in fighting. I'm 5'5", about 135 pounds and break easily. So fighting is not a good idea for me. Here's the tale. I'd been a senior leadership role at a place I worked at for almost 7 years, and it was time to resign. Due to many factors specifically based around setting the organization up for success and not burning any bridges, I developed a rather long timeline that culminated in a specific date when I would tender my resignation.
This sounds complicated.
Giving a full 8 weeks notice. All in all, let's say it was about a 6 month timeline. As you can imagine, I was counting down the days. 2 weeks before my planned resignation, my boss, with whom I shared a lukewarm professional relationship, invited me to caddy for him or her at, I'll just say to keep it blind, blank pro-am, a PGA Tour event pro-am.
Okay.
What especially jammed me up here is that the pro-am was set for just 2 days before I was supposed to tender this resignation. So despite our mediocre rapport, it was very cool of her to invite me, as this was obviously a big opportunity for any golf enthusiast. What's that?
Her or him.
Yeah, her or him. Yeah. We'll just say it's her. We won't say what pro-am though. A nice PGA Tour event. So lukewarm rapport, invited to do it for a golf. She knew I was a golf enthusiast. Irrelevant, but relevant to paint the picture. She had just picked up golf the prior year, and her good shots are those that get airborne. So my question is, and he will answer it for us, what happened? Do I accept the pro-am opportunity and still resign 2 days later? Do I resign? Again, this is caddying in the pro-am. It's not playing in the pro-am. Do I accept the pro-am opportunity and still resign 2 days later? Do I resign early and put the ball in her court if she still wants to invite me? Do I push back the resignation and end up giving less notice? Guy seems very honorable in the way he's resigning and just trying to keep bridges afloat. Not burn bridges here.
Yeah. So here's what I would do. And maybe you have an answer as well, but I think stuff like that is such a, it's almost like a road trip in college where it's very galvanizing, bonding, like fun, cool experience. You can't do that and then come in on Monday morning and I'm out.
I think she would immediately think the pro-am was a precipitating factor for your resignation.
Yeah.
Or among them.
Yeah. You know? That you can't, like, and I don't even mean like morally you can't do that. It just would be such a weird, like awkward, it would be tough. I think you have to, it'd be different if you were playing, just you're caddying. I think you have to say like, hey, family commitment, whatever, and bail on it and just follow through with the resignation on Monday.
I think I think it's hard to do it and then resign to, because like I said, it would be sort of, is this why? Was I that bad a loop? Was that miserable? Like what? I don't know. And maybe that then sort of negates all the work you've done to make this sort of a graceful exit. So I would probably resign, like, or signal I'm planning to resign or push back the notice. I don't even know that. I would think I would just come out there and say, hey, just for your purpose, it's caddying. Like, come on. I don't know. Maybe I'm spoiled. I don't need to caddy in a pro-am. I don't know. I'd rather just go to the event. Is that fair?
Yeah, I know. I agree. But I think it's also hard. Like, actually, no, instead of caddying for you, I'm leaving.
Well, like, I would just be like, full disclosure, I'm, you know, planning to offer my notice here 2 days from after the pro-am. I just want to let you know that. And if I lose that opportunity, that's too bad. But yeah. I think that's the way you do it. All right, resolution. I ended up accepting the invitation and resigned 2 days later. So our advice was immaterial on this one.
I wanted to pick it. Was there a story attached?
Yes. All went well and no bad blood. Details from the day. This is amazing. I arrived at sunrise to respectfully take advantage of my inside the ropes access. This guy sounds like a great guy. This was Wednesday after the US Open. Oh, I may have just let you know what event that was. So the vibe was very cool. My boss loaded up her brand new Strada bag, complete with the starter set of clubs.
Oh, gosh.
With 2 dozen golf balls, her full purse. This bag may have been too heavy to check on a plane. So he's looping now. He's carrying this. I parted with my group after the round and went to watch more golf, but quickly realized that pro-ams are entirely unwatchable. Yeah, they're unwatchable and dangerous, quite honestly. I wouldn't be up there. Balls flying every which way. They're unwatchable. Between the bad golf and the people they have to deal with, those are the AMs, I cannot believe pros have to do this every week. Every week. I had one guy, cover your kids' ears, I had one guy in my group try out a masturbation joke with Francesco Molinari on the second hole.
Oh my God.
And another guy fight with Danny Willett over which way a putt was going to break. After this realization, I went back to the range where I happened upon Rory smashing drivers into the back of the range for about a half hour, and this became the highlight of the day. Life-changing, dare I say. Brendan, you mentioned in a recent podcast how impressive to see these guys hit balls in person. This cannot be understated. So, good details about carrying the bag with the purse and 2 dozen balls and Strada tour bag with starter set. And then how about the gumption? I'm telling you, these pro-ams, I think it's just that they're antiquated. I watched it at Riviera. I was like, I can't believe these guys got to do this.
Yeah.
It's like,
and I think, they just recently didn't, what was it, 2 years ago they reduced it to 9 holes? Like you get to,
I think, yeah, you can kind of do 9 and 9. Yeah.
It's such a weird, it's so transactional.
I think it's of a time and place, and that's not anymore.
It's so obviously transactional to where like everybody knows that the players don't want to do it, and they're only doing it because they're trying to satiate these CEOs or executives or whoever that are keeping, you know, Chris DeMarco's salary rolling in.
Yeah. I mean, I understood their importance like at a time, but I don't know. It just doesn't, it seems like the tour has a new $1 billion to play with. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
And it's also like, honestly, like I've played in a pro-am before and you think it's going to be like, oh, I'm yucking it up with whoever.
Yeah,
you'd be better off with like 5 minutes in the clubhouse with the guy you were going to play with. You'd get more of what you're going for there than you would playing in the event.
A meet and greet type thing. Can you imagine getting in a fight with the pro about which way the putt was breaking or telling the joke to Francesco Molinari of all people? Jeez.
Both of those are just brutal. The Rory smashing drivers, the palate cleanser there for sure.
Yeah. So that is SGS golf advice. I have another one. We'll save for another day about soon to be father keeping the golf habit alive. That I feel like we are either disqualified to answer. I think maybe not the best people, or we are. I don't know, because our golf habits.
Let's do it. Let's roll through.
All right. Let me find it,
because. Yeah, we would be. I was actually thinking about this today. Do you have any? I knew that I was going to be on the podcast, and I was thinking about. I went to grab an RX bar. Went to grab just something to eat this morning, and I was like, I wonder what bars Brennan gives to all his many children. We have the same number of kids, but. And then I was like, I wonder what Brennan's like best parenting advice for like a young dad or young family would be? Like, do you have any like good, like funny or serious parenting tips?
Spot here. I mean, there's a million of them. I mean, a good one, and I credit my wife with this, like this is very minute, because I found myself 2 days ago. I mean, I'm four, you know, my oldest is like 11.
Same.
The last one, fourth kid is now 4.
Same.
Like, we're just past the era of dealing with a lot of the nonsense,
yep.
You know, where you're self-sufficient. The youngest got some sort of stomach ailment and puked in the car, and I'm cleaning the puke out of like the booster seat, and it's in the track of the seat where the seat goes up and down, like all the way down. I'm like, I am too old for this shit. Like, this is like, I've passed this era of parenting. The big one my wife has done is like the little like puke bags in the back of every pocket.
And okay. Like,
all these kids are trained at this point. We avoided it. We trial by fire. Not the most sentimental parenting advice, which, you know, is always, it's not hard. It's just constant. That's like the one I've thrown out there. Like, it's not a calculus problem you are incapable of solving. It's just constant. But yeah, the puke bags in the car is a nice one.
No, that's not. I was going for minute. We went. I took my kids to this Harry Potter. I don't even know what it's called, but they basically set up the Forbidden Forest near, like, in this park near where I live. We went. We're coming home. Great time. They loved it. And my 7-year-old throws up. It's in the track thing, and you're like, I'm on my knee, like on my hands and knees in the back of the vehicle, just scraping throw up out. And you're like, how did I pass this?
Yeah, I was okay with that when they were like 3 and 4. I guess this is the fourth child is now 4, and I was solo, so she couldn't commandeer the bag, you know, that we have stationed around the car in every pocket. There are these, like, all the other kids are trained at this point. And so we got caught. We got caught, you know, in between release patterns on that one. Cleaning out the car. Yeah,
so. For sure. I was trying to think of mine. I think this is a little bit more serious, but I think, like, reading to your kids. Like, I've loved that part of it. Some people love the, like, oh, I'm going to play Dollhouse, or I'm going to play whatever, like, make-believe. Yeah. I never got into that. I kind of felt guilty for it. And then I was like, I'll just read to them. Like, I love reading. They love me reading to them. And that's been a cool part of our relationship. It's been great.
Yep. That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. I think I'm going to try to get my kids to play catch with me in the backyard today for opening day. Like, another one, you know? I don't know. Just try to, like, force that on them. Or if they don't want to read, do something active. Get them out of the screens. I don't know. It's become too much parenting advice, I suppose. But here's an email. Last one. 23-year-old married, one kid on the way, and slight interest in fighting. Slight interest. Wow. I'm assistant superintendent at Fairly Nice Country Club and get to play and use all the practice facilities any day after work, as long as it's not too crowded by the members. I'm expecting my first kid in a week or two. And as one dad to another, I have a question about how much golf I'm allowed to play and how long after the birth I can begin playing again. For reference, I play practice usually 3 to 4 times a week when I get off work.
Jeez.
I start work at 6 and get off around 2:30. Okay. When my wife has been pregnant, she has no problem with it. Staying an hour or two after to play. So I'm still home before 5, which is better than most jobs, and have plenty of free time to spend with her and our dog. My wife is super nice to me and never gives me a problem about staying late to play. And I've talked to her about having the baby. And she still says I can go as long as everything is okay at home with the baby. However, feeling I may feel guilty playing after work for a couple hours when my wife is home alone with the newborn and slightly energetic dog. My question to you is, how long after the birth can I start playing again? How many days of the week is appropriate, or how long after 2:30 p.m.? Would you suggest I could play for it? Thanks for all you guys do.
It's a good question.
Yeah. Seems like a great wife. Good guy. Good job set up for which this, you know, I could see how he got, you know, was able to do it 3 or 4 times a week, especially with no kids.
Yeah.
How long after the birth could he start playing again? I might give that like 4 weeks.
Yeah. I was going to say, 3 to 4, I think is fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to someone who's got invited to an all-time like member guest, but it's like the week of his wife's induction date. And he's like, I don't know what to do. 3 or 4 weeks. And then like, I just read the room. She seems like, she says she's okay. Circumstances change. At the time of this email, the kid was not present. And life with the child was not, you know, the baby was not present yet. Wasn't out of the womb creating havoc on the mom there at 2:30 or 3:30. So maybe that changed. But she seems pretty understanding. No? She seems like... So I would say, like, read the room. If she's changed, if she's like no longer, understanding is the wrong word. Sorry. If she's no longer like as chill about it or thinks like, hey, maybe the duty should be, you know, get home by 3 if you can, then just adjust your schedule.
Yeah. I would say 3 quick things. 1, don't underestimate postpartum. Like that's really hard.
Yep.
Pay attention to that. Just out of like kindness. 2 would be like make sure to give her space to do things also. I think that's something that's easy to forget.
Makes sense.
And then 3, the thing that I try to do and is hard just because there's so much going on, but steal time from other places that are not like family time, right? Like steal time from
Twitter, Instagram scrolling.
Yes. Or work time, whatever. And it sounds like he's kind of already does that, right? Like it sounds like that's sort of already the path, but that's, although I'm probably not the best to be talking about this because I'm playing my first round of golf of the year tomorrow. So
what I was going to say. I don't think we've kept up. I've played more rounds in Ireland than I pretty much, that's about my yearly quota. But a good, I don't know, guy seems well balanced. The wife seems, you know, well balanced about it. Just read the room. It seems like you have a job and setup wherein you can certainly keep the habit up. And maybe it's not 3 to 4. It starts out as once a week and then it becomes twice a week for while the baby's a newborn for a year or so. I don't know. Good deal. It's always a push and pull. Depends on your situation.
So. Yeah.
And all right.
I think later you can start taking him to start taking the kids.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Kyle, thank you for joining us. We kept you for a quick one. It's 1 hour and 2 minutes now. Where can everyone find your work? Normal Sport Newsletter, Kyle Porter on Twitter, CBS.com, CBSSports.com.
CBSSports.com, NormalSport.com. We got rid of the A Normal Sport. That was a costly letter to buy off, but we recently did it. And yeah, the newsletter's been super fun. I just get to riff about just ridiculous things in the same vein that you guys are talking about on here. I've been writing a ton about the Masters for CBSSports.com. That'll start going up next week. And I'm excited to see both of you guys here in about, 10 days, 12 days?
About another, 10 days is about it. Yeah, I would commend your... Nobody does the Masters as well as you do in terms of coverage, writing, like enthusiasm, appreciation, deep dive. I think you do it just about as well as anyone. So, you know, I guess that will be in CBS. I mean, it's everywhere, Twitter. Yeah. So, you know, now's the time to jump in. I assume if you listen to this, you are already in and aware. So, Kyle, thank you for joining the Shotgun Start. We will see you in Augusta in about 10 days.
Okay, Brennan.